Today on CityCast Denver, which two restaurants would you pick to reflect the rich mosaic of Colorado dining? The New York Times published their choices earlier this week, and we found them interesting. That plus, Exandra found a dusty old box of Denver trivia cards from the 80s, so of course we're cracking that sucker open and seeing how we do. Today is Friday, October 15th, 2021. I'm Paul Caroli, and this is CityCast Denver. Welcome back to CityCast Denver, the show about the city that still can't watch its own basketball and hockey teams on TV. The Avs had their season opener Wednesday night, which is last night for us right now. We're recording on a Thursday, but I was downtown. I saw a lot of people wearing uniforms. Happy for those people. They got to see the game. I'm here with our host, Bree Davies.
I thought you're going to start with something like that, and that's not our topic today. You know, I have so many feelings about how I have to illegally watch Nuggets games every year now that I'm a Nuggets person.
Yeah.
And by every year, I mean this is the second year that I'm now stealing Nuggets games off of the internet from some weird website called NBAsomething.com. Mm-hmm. So stick it to that, whoever's problem this is. We'll get into that
at some point. We'll figure it out. I have no idea what the actual problem is. I know there's a dispute over rights, but it's complicated.
It is.
Also joining us today, our producer, Xander McMahon.
Hello, I don't watch sports, so this does not apply to me.
And Peyton Garcia, who writes our morning weekday newsletter.
We refuse to pay for cable, so Willie steals all of his sports watching.
That's right, Willie. Willie and I are on the same team. Team stealing our sports.
Last week, we signed up for a Hulu Live TV account. We're just doing the free trials with different emails so that we can get
nice,
great games.
So
welcome, everybody. It's Friday, and as we do every Friday, we're looking back at the news of the week. We're talking about it, and our first story...
This is an opinion show. I just want to put that out there, that we talk about the news, but we just have opinions about it versus the rest of the week where we generally explore a news topic with an expert.
You just couldn't help yourself, Bree, huh?
I couldn't help myself.
it's important.
Sorry,
to
Paul.
Set expectations.
I just want to make that clarification about
we're humans.
Fridays.
We have perspectives. I think people should understand that about us. And the four of us, what caught our eye this week more than anything else was this story from the New York Times. They published a list of the 50 most, quote unquote, vibrant and delicious restaurants in the United States. Now, it wasn't a top 50. It wasn't a ranked list. But they said that together, these 50 places reflect the rich mosaic of American dining, which was very lofty language, and there were two Denver restaurants on the list. So we thought, do these two restaurants reflect the rich mosaic of Denver dining? The two restaurants were Komal Heritage Food Incubator and Frasca Food and Wine in Boulder. Peyton, I want to start with you. You had an interesting reaction to this. Maybe you could say briefly what Komal and Frasca are and what you thought about this list and their appearance on it.
Yeah, so my immediate reaction was just that these two restaurants could not be more polar opposite, just in everything, in what they serve, in their price point, in who they serve, in where they're located. So Komal Heritage Food Incubator is located in Five Points, and I think they're 5 years old, and their whole model is they bring in immigrant refugee women. And they bring them in and they give them stipends to support their families while they train them on the business side of running a restaurant. And so it's I think a 12 to 18 month, maybe it's 12 to 16 month program where they bring these women in and they're training them how to run a business, But at the same time, they're serving their food to patrons. So they do have a lunch menu. You can come in and you're getting a wide variety of international fare, everything from Africa to Latin America to the Middle East. It's incredible. And their price point is super affordable. You know, you're getting $5 chips and salsa, $10 entrees. And it's a really popular thing. They've launched, I think, 7 women into their own businesses. I think there's 4 restaurants that have come out of this, or restaurant brands that have come out of this. And it's just, it's a very, very cool thing that they're doing. And then you have Frasca Food and Wine, which is 17 years old, and it is located on Pearl Street in Boulder. And it's everything that is opposite of Komal Heritage Food Incubator. So
no social mission, no good cause behind it.
No, their chefs are classically trained in Paris and France, and they've received 11 James Beard Award nominations. They've won 3 James Beard Awards. It's their wine program is run by Bobby Stuckey, who is, you know, if you're in the food world, that's a household name. I mean, you'll get laughed at if you don't know who Bobby Stuckey is. A price for a 4-course dinner, because they only do, you don't go in and you order what you want. You have to do their 4-course plated dinners that they do. And it's $125 a person for that. So that doesn't include drinks or anything, which is not super crazy. I mean, there's really fancy restaurants in Denver that are around the same price point. But the whole point is, when you're comparing it to Komal Heritage Food Incubator, it's different. And that's just for the 4-course dinner. If you want to do the chef's dinner, it's $200 a person. And you can add wine pairings for $130 a person. So, yeah, those are the two. And just my immediate thought was, wow, you could not pick two more different restaurants, which I guess in a way does kind of show this, what's the word you used, Paul?
The rich mosaic of American dining.
Yes, that. The rich mosaic. So you are showing that, like, Colorado caters, like, has these two completely opposite end of the spectrum restaurants that are obviously worth noting and worth going to. But I think there's a lot to unpack here, just in the sense that it's like, of course, Frasca's in Boulder. That's who that caters to. There's the only place Frasca could be is Boulder, and that Komal Heritage Food Incubator is awesomely in Five Points.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't Frasca's food like from one tiny region of Italy too? Like, all I've read that online. I was like, wow,
that was their inspiration. Their inspiration was to basically, yeah, it's to bring that food from a very, very, very tiny region in Italy, a very specific region. Their wine and their food is inspired from that itty bitty region. And they're, like I said, their chefs all trained, like, overseas. They have, you know, they've been at Michelin stars. They've gone to these really prestigious food academies. And then at Komal, you've got these women who are just here and just need to make ends meet. And they, you know, they're just trying to find their American dream, and Komal Heritage Food Incubator is allowing them to do that. So it's really cool.
Yeah. Bree, have you ever been to either of these places? Do you think they reflect the rich mosaic of Denver dining right now?
No, I haven't. I mean, what's striking to me is that Komal is sort of embracing the women's work that food often has been in families and cultures for a long time. And then Frasca's sort of representation of what happens when, like, male things take over and they create all these, like, basically made
rigid
up
systems,
ideas of what
power
is
structures.
It's a power. Yeah. I see a power structure thing happening here. So it doesn't mean I wouldn't go to both of them, or that I don't love fancy Italian food, for sure, because I do. It just, that's what struck me. And I think I see this more as like a thing that the New York Times is doing. It's like, look, we're able to pick something so run of the mill every day and then something so fancy because we are like, this is our idea of diversity or whatever.
I do wonder, like, if that, now that you bring that up, I wonder if that was intentional by the people who wrote this list. If it's like, okay, we picked this really fancy place, but now we also need to pick this you know, this kind of good cause, small incubator place. And maybe I'm just naive. Yeah. Until you brought that up, I was just like, wow, that's so cool that like a really fancy place got picked in this small place. But maybe you're right. Maybe it was done intentionally. I don't know.
And I think that that's a move in food writing in general in the last couple of years, too, is to acknowledge that there's these class lines and things with food, and that they're apparent in all these different ways, more than just what you're eating, but like the place that you're in, who serves it, who makes it, what the origin of the restaurant is, all those kinds of things. So, yeah, I don't know the intention of this list, but that was just the thing that struck me the most, was how different these are prefaced, or how they're described too. Like, this one's like, we're helping women. Like, when these women are probably doing these people keep their families going. I mean, this is like a women's labor thing to me.
I read this article from CNN spotlighting, and it was from earlier this year. It was in September of this year, so, you know, just last month. And it spotlights one of the women who launched a restaurant out of Komal, and they quote her, and it's so adorable. She says, "I love cumin, but the secret ingredient is love." And I don't think that is anything, like, I don't think the chefs at Frasca would say that. They'd be like, "The secret ingredient is this very rare microgreen that we imported from Italy."
The secret ingredient is a chemical that we use to make it extra fluffy in this one specific way.
So I found that to be, but what really made me mad is I'm reading the CNN article. They never once name her restaurant. They just say she has a restaurant. And I'm like, that sucks.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, that, it's like there's a dismissal of women's
work. I do have to give a shout out, though, to, so Carlin Carr, she runs the wine program alongside Bobby Stecky at Frasca. So I have to give her a go female shout out. Because she does an awesome job, and she's really made a name for herself in the wine world. And then they also had, I don't know if she's still there. I'm looking at an article from 2019 that was written about her, but there's a husband and wife duo that runs the kitchen at Frasca, and she's an Asian woman. Her name is Kelly June, I think is how you say it. But she is running, or at least was in 2019, running the kitchen at Frasca. So I do have to give them that shout out. Granted, it was Lachlan McKinnon Patterson is who launched it alongside Bobby Stuckey. And yeah, that's way different than the people who are launching restaurants at Komal. But they do have some women representation at Frasca.
Alexander, let's go to you. How did you feel about the juxtaposition between Komal and Frasca on this list?
I mean, I agree with Bree that it did feel like intentional by the New York Times to be like, oh, like I almost wonder when they were picking restaurants, they had certain qualifications. It's like, okay, this many X amount of restaurants need to be, you know, high priced, and X amount of restaurants need to be more affordable. But I think the thing that stuck out to me, and something I really appreciated when I was reading the Denver Post article that was covering this list, Josie Sexton over there made the point that, like, are these lists even the point right now? Like, should we even be making these lists after the year that the restaurant industry has had? It's like, it seems, I don't know, like almost a little insensitive, or just like not what we should be prioritizing right now as restaurants recover and come out of like the havoc that the pandemic wreaked on them. So that was what stuck out to me the most was like, why are we even doing this list? Not what's on the list, but like, why does this list even exist right now?
It's a great point. I was reading, I think it was Denver, right? They said the day after the New York Times article ran, Komal was just packed, overrun with customers, which is great for Komal for sure. But I mean,
I'm sure the same thing happened.
I don't know. There's so many. Right. Yeah. And Frasca probably doesn't need the crowd. No. But there's so many other restaurants out there, though, that are hurting for that kind of attention. And it's, I mean, good for Frasca and especially good for Komal, but it kind of sucks.
All right, I think that's a perfectly good place to leave it for Komal and Frasca and the New York Times. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by the Museum of Outdoor Arts. Because on Sunday, April 28th, the museum is hosting La Primavera Festival, a celebration of spring, to kick off event season at Marjorie Park. La Primavera Festival is a family-friendly event inspired in part by the Gaelic Bealtaine celebration and European May Day, marking the beginning of summer. And the star of the show is really something special. They're premiering the latest permanent installation by local artist Lonnie Hansen. It's called The Cabinet of Curiosities and Impossibilities. Hansen describes it as an enchanting homage to English curio shops, featuring a collection of relics from fairy tales and nursery rhymes that tell stories about early optics, geometry, magical tools, celestial wonders, and more. The festival includes a pancake brunch, live Celtic music, maypole dancing, flower crown and basket making, yard games, and a bar for adult beverages. Tickets are available now at moaonline.org. That's moaonline.org.
All right, next up, Xandra, I'm turning it over to you. You've got a game for us, I think?
Oh, yeah. All right, so a little bit of backstory first. I was at a yard sale last Friday. And, you know, going through their wares, they had a lot of old stuff. And then I stumbled upon this dusty old box. And on the cover, it said Denver Trivia Game Cards. And I was like, yes. So they sold it to me for $1. And now I bring it to you all to quiz your Denver knowledge. Now, this game, I believe, came out in 1984.
Okay.
So you could say the trivia is a little outdated.
So was I the only one born?
How many of us were alive?
I mean, my mom, I think, was 9 in 1984. No, yeah, 11 maybe.
Me and Peyton's mom were around in 1984. I was 4.
Hey,
so.
I'm not going to let that slow me down. Bring it on. I read history.
Look, here's the thing. A lot of these questions are really tricky, but I tried to pick some easy ones for you guys for this first round of trivia, and I'm sure we'll bring this segment back. I'm going to do this Jeopardy style. So I'm going to toss the question out to all three of you, and because listeners, you can't see this, we're all on Zoom, and so to buzz in, I'm going to have them all use the reaction button on Zoom. So whoever can react first in Zoom, I'm going to call on. You get the first option to answer. If you get it wrong, we'll go to the next person who buzzed in, okay?
Got it.
I have no point system worked out, though, so you all just need to... Actually, okay. I mean, if we really want to decide a winner, I can put the cards... I can put... If you get the card, I'll put it down so that we can count how many cards each of you has at the end of the game. And then you'll be the big winner of nothing! of Denver Trivia! Woo-hoo! Okay, are you ready?
Absolutely.
Ready.
Yep.
Wait, I lost my first question. Hang on. Have your fingers ready. What is Metro Denver's largest water amusement park? Bree.
Waterworld.
Correct.
Damn it, I should have answered that one.
Starting off really easy.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Not going to have many more chances.
Okay. At what Denver high school did Corky Gonzalez and the Crusade for Justice hold numerous protest demonstrations in the 1960s? Oh, I was reading, so I don't know who did it first.
It was Bree. Bree had her hand
It was
up.
Bree. Okay, like, thank you for your honesty.
As soon as you said Corky Gonzalez and school...
It's West High School.
That is correct.
Sorry, Paul.
No, that's all right.
I had a feeling that Brie was going to clean up here, but we'll
yeah,
see.
She's going to.
Okay, here's a little bit of a trickier one. Maybe. I don't know. Who served as mayor of Denver from 1904 until 1912 and again from 1916 until his death in 1918? Paul.
That's Mr. Robert Speer.
That is correct.
Dang it, Paul.
Wow. I did
beautiful
not know
that one. Robert Speer.
Beautiful.
City Beautiful.
City Beautiful. Also known for being extremely corrupt in his election situation and how he got there in the first place.
We should do a show about Robert Speer.
We should. He's such an interesting person.
Mm-hmm.
And shaped the city so much.
Is that who Speer Boulevard's named
yep.
after?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's the reason we have the park system we do, too.
Hmm. Okay, we got to get Peyton on the board.
Oh, I've passed. I knew the first two, and I don't think they're going to get any easier.
No, it's okay. There's some easy ones mixed in here. We go. We got to get you in the game, Peyton. All right. According to its slogan, what does the Seattle Fish Company sell?
Whoa.
According to its slogan.
Fish?
You got to buzz in, Peyton.
I don't know its slogan. Sorry. I'm just here. I'm the peanut gallery.
I would love to hear their slogan.
Okay. We're going to say no one's getting this. If it swims, we sell it.
Oh, my gosh.
If it swims, we sell it.
That's super unappetizing, to be honest.
People swim.
Yeah, people swim.
Yeah. Do shrimp swim?
Yeah, they float around. Yeah. All right. Next question. Here's a fun one. Give the median age of the population of Denver as of 1984.
Whoa.
Median age of Denverites in 1984.
Hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Would anyone like to take a stab in the dark?
42. 42.
Okay, Peyton? No. 31 years old.
Oh, dang. Okay.
I wonder what the median age is now.
I would be curious.
Yeah.
I would think it might be skewing younger, but...
Oh, wait a second. I just Googled Denver median age. 34.5 years as of 2019.
Oh,
older.
Isn't that interesting?
People are getting older. I thought it would have gone the other way.
Yeah, we talk so too. Much about like all these young people who've moved here in the last 10 years. Turns out.
They did. They moved here 10 years ago when they were 24.
We're learning so much. All right. This one should be easy. In the summer of 1972, Dick Lamb helped lead the movement to prevent this major event from being held in Colorado. Did Bree buzz in
Bree,
before
go
Paul?
Ahead. You can have it.
Oh, no.
I know I'm stealing
Paul's.
Paul's
so passionate about this, though.
It's Paul's, like, whole thing in life is the Olympics.
It is my favorite thing. Oh, you know what? We've been talking about Halloween and Halloween costumes. Can I just, like, step away for 1 second to show you all something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
As long as we can keep this in the episode.
Isn't Paul just the slyest typer? Whenever we're on Zoom, he's always like, he looks like he's looking right at you, but he's like secretly.
I know. I was like, how did he Google? Oh.
Here we go.
Paul got.
I had this made a couple of years ago. This is a baseball cap that says Denver 76 on it with the Olympic rings.
It's like old school foam.
Yeah. It's like
trucker
70s
hat.
Style. I tried to do it as like 70s style as I could. And I went I dressed up for Halloween 1 year as the ghost of the 76 Denver Olympics.
Oh my gosh. That's so
yeah,
Paul.
Yeah, guess how many people
that's
got
so
that?
Great.
None.
Yeah,
nobody.
Zero, of course. It was embarrassing.
Oh, that's okay.
It's like, how'd you like me to explain the story for 25 minutes to you at this party?
This Halloween.
Oh, no?
They were like, oh my god, I got stuck next to the Olympics guy.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay, yeah. So the answer was 1976 Winter Olympics. We'll give that to Bree. Okay, here's one. Though gold is what brought people to Denver, the Tabers, Browns, etc. made their fortunes from what? Bree?
Silver.
Yep. Come on, you guys.
And then... the Tabers lost it all.
I would not have known that. I did not know. The Tabers,
really?
The Browns? No.
Yeah, the silver crash and all that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's something you guys did miss by not maybe being born or not being here is we used to have a lot of mining themed things. And there used to be a restaurant called Baby Doe's that was named after Baby Doe Tabor. And it was on the side of I-25. And it was like a mine.
Baby Doe Tabor.
Oh yeah, look her up. She's fascinating.
Yeah,
fascinating person.
Okay, who lives on the southeast corner of 8th and Pennsylvania? Bree,
the governor.
Yes.
That was there too slow.
Just so you guys know, I stopped clicking.
Sorry,
poor Peyton.
Sorry, Peyton.
This is a Bree and Paul game. I'm not quick enough for this. I'm just here to add.
If I was not moderating Peyton, I would be in the same boat as you. It would just be, it's just, a
pain. Pain, it's not a, like a real or point of pride for me either. That I know this much about the city.
It should be.
I mean, it is. I love it. But I'm like, it's not like a, it's not a functional skill outside of this show.
Okay. We just have a few questions left. Do we have time, Paul?
Sure.
We have time. All right. Name Denver's first amusement park.
Oh.
I thought Brie would get... Okay, Brie.
I want to say that it was Eelich's.
I think there's a different one.
But
I
it
think...
could be another... Go ahead, Paul.
I mean, I don't know the name
Brie,
of it, though.
Brie's wrong. Brie's wrong.
Okay. I have another guess if Paul doesn't
know. I just know where I think it was. Mm. I think I know it was at Alamo Placita Park. There used to be an amusement park with like...
Oh, yeah.
Like a jumping board and a...
Paul, I think you're right.
It's not Manhattan Beach.
No.
What's the real answer? I would not know the name of it.
The answer, but I think you're right about its location, Paul, is Riverfront Park.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so too.
That sounds right.
Riverfront Park. Okay. In what year did RTD introduce its articulated buses?
Are those like the accordion style bus?
I don't know what articulated buses are. I'm sure Nate Miner would know.
Maybe like a disability rights question or something.
Articulated buses.
I'm guessing it's those accordion buses. And I have not a clue. I don't know, maybe 1979.
I'll throw in a guess. Yeah, I'm going to say 19. Well,
Has to be before 83.
I'm trying to reason it out. Like, would they introduce new buses during the oil crisis? It would probably be before that.
This game came out in 1984, just so you know. That's the only hint I will give you.
1982.
Oh, so close, Paul.
1983.
Wow.
Yeah. Very newsy game. Good for them.
Articulated buses are kind of newer.
But we don't know what they are.
But we don't,
yeah. Google them?
Yeah, Paul, use your sly typing skills to Google them.
Oh, no. Yeah, Brie was exactly right. Articulated bus can refer to a bendy bus, a tandem bus, a vestibule bus, and it's just the buses with the accordion in the middle.
Why don't they just call them accordion buses?
Right?
Looks like some people
do. That would be too simple. Moving on, two questions left. Paul, I want you to get one more.
I want that too.
Yeah, just do it, Paul.
Wow. Okay, on, I Paul. See how this is going. Okay,
we're all ganging up on Brie. Name the largest circulation weekly newspaper in Colorado in 1984.
Weekly Brie. Newspaper in 1984.
Oh, weekly?
Yeah, weekly newspaper.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably something in like the metro area, right?
Kind of a curveball there.
What would be a weekly?
Yeah, Rocky Mountain News is daily back then.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I don't know. I couldn't tell you a weekly newspaper.
I didn't know we had a weekly.
All right.
Other than like the Cherry Creek Chronicle or something.
This is actually very interesting. So the largest circulation weekly newspaper in Colorado at that time was the Denver Catholic Register.
Oh, of course. Sorry, my family got that. So
neat. What was?
I also think it was like comes to your house if you go to Catholic school. I don't think you get a choice. I think that might be why it was so big in circulation.
That makes sense.
What kind of news did they have?
Catholic stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
What the Pope was up to? What the Archdiocese here was up to? Whose fish fry was going off? You know. Who was having like a church garage sale, to, you know, but also like politics stuff, healthcare, blah, blah, blah.
I just realized I've been like holding these cards up, but I hope you all can't see the answers on the back.
No, I can't.
All right. No. Bree's just been cheating.
I know.
Okay. Final question. We probably know who the winner is, but like we all won in our hearts. On what street is the Molly Brown house located?
Oh
Brie. You should know that.
I know, I feel.
I could tell you three streets that it is close to.
My guess is Pennsylvania.
Bree's right.
Well done.
Wow.
Well done.
I was like, Pennsylvania, job, Pearl, Logan.
Claps for Bree.
Wow. So Bree got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 right. Paul got 1.
You guys are really treating me like the class kiss up over here. Hey, it's not my fault. This is impressive. Told you I just have useless information in my mind.
I'll how many questions did you ask, Xandra?
12.
12. I'll say I knew probably half of those.
Yeah, that's good. I tried to pick like a good mix of easy but like not obvious ones. And there's so many more in that box, so
we'll do this again.
We'll round two.
Well, one last short bit of business before we say goodbye this Friday. We're doing something fun next week. The same way we did breakfast burritos, the same way we did out-of-state burger chains. This time we're taking on an epic showdown, a clash of the titans. Two Denver-style, Mission-style burrito joints, Chipotle versus Illegal Pete's. We're testing them out. Of course, we've probably all been to both a bunch of times over the years, but we're going again. We're putting up against each other. It's to say once and for all which one is the one, the best, the one to represent everything that a good Denver-style, Mission-style burrito should be. And we want to hear from you, what you all think about Chipotle and Illegal Pete's, which one's better, which one's worse, why. Please leave us a voicemail with your name and neighborhood at 720-500-5418. That's 720-500-5418, and we might play your message on the show. And that's all for today here on CityCast Denver. Our producers this week were me, Paul Caroli, and Xander McMahon. Peyton Garcia writes our morning newsletter. Bree Davies is our host. Our music is by Los Mocochetes, with additional mixing by Tyler Lindgren. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at CityCast Denver. Tell a friend about us the next time you see him. And if you're looking for more news and cool events and recommendations of fun things to do around the city, sign up for that morning newsletter I mentioned. You can learn more about that and subscribe at denver.citycast.fm. See you next week, Denver.
I didn't get to give a shout out. Whoever runs the Waterworld Twitter talks to me sometimes.
I'll put that as the blooper break.